I'm very pleased to be here, and I see some outstanding supporters for President Ford. I'm very grateful for that. I think I detect a few Carter supporters. All right. There are always about a half a dozen in a crowd this size, so... I'm very pleased to be here, of course, with... Must be somebody upstairs there. Well, just let me say that I appreciate having a chance to, I think, meet for the second time. Even I may not recall the first time, Forrest Tucker. I'm one of your F Troop fans, so I watched that for years and laughed and picked up all the good one-liners I could in F Troop. Sort of reminded me of my platoon in World War II. But it was an outstanding series, and I'm very pleased to be here and, of course, to have a chance to participate with Bob Orr and John Myers and other Republican leaders. I might say, too, that I'm very proud to be on the ticket with President Ford. I know of no finer American than President Ford, and you're going to elect him president next Tuesday. I'm just a little bit hoarse. I had my debate down in Houston. I stood in that draft for 75 minutes. But we think it came out all right, so very pleased to have been there. I guess in the last 6 days, you could talk about a lot of things in the campaign. You could talk about the men. You could talk about the issues. Talk about the future of America. Now, I've tried to emphasize in the past few days, in fact, the past several weeks since I've been on the road, one or two things that might be of interest to young Americans and of interest to their mothers and their grandmothers and, yes, their fathers and grandfathers and their girlfriends or whatever. I think the one thing we take for granted in America, and I'm thankful we can take it for granted, the fact that we're at peace, the fact that we provide moral leadership in the world, and the fact that we provide hope and opportunity for those who seek freedom and those who live just hoping that someday they can share what Americans take for granted, and that's life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness or anything you want to call it. I'm not going to talk in any partisan tone when I talk about peace. But I am going to suggest this. As you go home tonight and watch your television or turn on the radio or read the nightly news, you're not going to find any body counts, so many Americans killed, someone else killed. You're not going to read that in Terre Haute tomorrow or next week, there'll be a memorial service for some young American who's been brought home to be buried. You're not going to see some friend of yours hauled off to some hospital with a leg or an arm gone or some other way maimed or wounded mentally or physically. And that's because we're at peace. And we're at peace because we're strong. And we're strong because of President Ford's leadership. And because we're strong... And because of his leadership, we're respected at home and abroad by our friends and our potential adversaries. And that says a lot about America. And I just say to those who may be voting for the first time, and I know there are probably some good Democrats in this audience, I hope so. There are probably some good independents in this audience, and I hope so. as well as Republicans in this audience. If there's any doubt in your mind between now and next Tuesday, I'd reflect on America. I'd reflect on the vision of America. I would ask myself, what do I want for America? What do I want for a future? I don't care whether you're a Carter supporter today or a Ford supporter today. The universal hope is that we'll have peace and that you can finish your education and you're not being drafted anymore, or that you can go back to your job without the fear of someone yanking you off in the draft and sending you off to some far-off country to fight a war where we don't know or don't have a commitment and really don't understand. So that's not going to really fall down. I'm still up there, so we're going to be all right. And if I can stress anything in these next few minutes, it's a need for a strong America. Now, President Ford has one view and Governor Carter has another. And I think it's fair to talk about Governor Carter's view. He said in 1975, it's reported in the L.A. Times and the Savannah News, that we ought to cut our defense budget by $15 billion. That's his statement, not ours. Oh, that sounds great. If we didn't have any problems in the world and if we were certain that everybody else was going to cut their defense budget, I'd say fine. Now he's saying we ought to cut it $5 to $7 billion. Well, this year, as John Myers knows, because of the personal efforts and personal persuasion of President Ford, we have for the first time real growth in our defense budget. And I'm not suggesting we ought to have real growth just to spend more money for defense or just to provide jobs for peace. I'm suggesting that we cannot sit down with the Russians and talk about an arms agreement and be very realistic about easing tensions unless we're number one, unless we deal from strength. That's the way it is at this university. That's the way it is in foreign policy. And so as you reflect today about our strength, yes, about our moral strength and our military strength, let's make certain we look at it in a positive way. We're talking about military strength and military power for only one reason. We want no territory. We want no aggression. We want to keep even the voice that we just heard free. So I think particularly young people understand that. I remember back in World War II, after Pearl Harbor, they trained with broomsticks in America. That's how prepared we were. And some in this audience may have trained with those broomsticks. We didn't have guns. We didn't have enough to go around. Now, we're going to maintain our strength and maintain our freedom and maintain peace in the world if our adversaries and potential adversaries understand our commitment, not for war, but our commitment to peace. And so as we listen to President Ford, as we look at President Ford's record, and as you walk into that booth on next Tuesday, you say, well, maybe I don't like what President Ford did here. Maybe I didn't like this. I'm not quite certain of Governor Carter, but I'm certain of one thing. That in the area of defense, Ford is for a stronger America. You're going to make the right choice. You're going to vote for President Ford. I'd suggest you drink some pineapple juice. It's a lot better for you than peanut butter, and besides, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. Come to think of it, maybe peanut butter would be better in your case. Glad I dropped in. Well, we're in a very serious week, and I want to say to those, in addition to talking about peace, just take a minute to talk about tax reform. We've heard a great deal of this from Governor Carter. He was very impressive in his acceptance speech, and he said that our national tax system is a disgrace. What he didn't tell young Americans or any Americans is that the Congress has been controlled by liberal Democrats for 22 years and 40 out of the past 44 years. It's great to be in a state where you have the unemployment rate going down because of the great efforts of President Ford and Governor Bowen, and that's a plus for America. And we're going to have John Myers back in Congress next year. And then on the Senate side, we're going to have that great young American, Dick Lugar, coming to the Senate. And maybe if there are enough come to Congress who are really concerned about senior citizens and about inflation and about real tax reform, we'll have it. We'll continue to nibble away at the rate of inflation, and President Ford's cut it in half now. There are 88 million Americans working, more than ever before in history. And we're concerned about the unemployment. Don't misunderstand me. But we think unemployment can be solved through the private sector, and we can help the private sector by cutting down inflation and getting people back to work in meaningful jobs and not dead-end government jobs, as advocated by the welfare candidate, Senator Mondale. And when we look at tax reform, remember that impressive speech I mentioned of Governor Carter's, his acceptance speech, and he said our system was a disgrace. Then the following week, he rushed up to New York City to meet with some small businessmen, Henry Ford and others. And they went to a little place, I guess McDonald's is Phil's, they went to a little place called Club 21. It's where a lot of small businessmen go for lunch. And I read this morning where Coca-Cola, that's another little small business, picked up the tab for that luncheon, about $1,200. And they talked about tax reform, and Governor Carter said, don't worry about any tax reform, at least for a year. It's going to take me a year to get started. And that's another reason to vote for President Ford. He's already started. He's there. And when Governor Carter was asked by the press about the $41,000, he took off his income tax, and it's perfectly legal. When he was asked, is that a loophole? He said, well, that's why we ought to reform our tax system. Now, I just asked those in this audience, maybe a lot of you paid $41,000 in taxes last year. I don't think too many did, but that's just how much of a loophole he had. So I want tax reform. President Ford wants tax reform. In fact, I offered the amendment on the Senate floor this year to raise a personal exemption for everyone from $750 to $1,000. It was defeated, but it was offered. And that's tax reform for middle-income Americans. And Governor Carter said in that Associated Press interview that he didn't think Americans wanted their taxes lowered. Now, anybody here doesn't want their taxes lowered? I'd be glad to have the doctor check you over right after the meeting. But I think most Americans want tax reform. Most Americans want tax relief. He also indicated that those who had higher than the median income would have their taxes increased. That turns out to be families earning $14,000 or more. Families. I think that's middle income, where they need tax benefits, where they have daughters and sons in college. They need tax relief, not higher taxes, and that's what President Ford advocates. And I would say to those concerned, and certainly some are, about agriculture, I have served on a House committee for 8 years and the Senate committee for 8 years. I'm going to play a very important role as Vice President of Agriculture, trying to expand our markets, because we know that the future of American agriculture is tied to exports. We also know that the American farmers, like the American student and the American small businessman, want to get government off their backs. They want to make their own decisions, and we're going to do that. So I just suggest that, you know, there's a lot of political rhetoric. There are a lot of statements made. But there are also a lot of facts out there. And you put your finger on the facts, remember this. Remember the Democrats, the liberal Democrats, have controlled the Congress for 22 years. Remember Governor Carter has criticized every veto by inference made by President Ford. He's saying, in effect, that he would have signed everything, which would have added either more taxes or more inflation to all the American people. And I think particularly of senior citizens who live on fixed income. When Governor Carter says he's going to tax all income alike. So if you saved all your life and bought a little stock and need it and going to sell it and make a profit, you're no longer going to get the capital gains tax treatment. You're going to get taxed right across the board. And if you sell your farmland, no more capital gains tax treatment. And if you own breeding stock, you're going to have your income taxed the same. That's what he says. And so I just suggest that President Ford has cut inflation in half, that there are more Americans working now than ever before in history, that we are at peace. And finally, that President Ford has the experience. And I don't know of anyone in this country who's been more thoroughly investigated by the FBI, by the prosecutor, yes, by the Democrats in the Congress, and I don't criticize them for that, than President Ford. He's been investigated from top to bottom. And I don't know of a single American whose objective, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, or independents, who questions the honesty or integrity of President Ford. And that says a lot for President Ford. So that's half the coin. That's reason enough to vote for President Ford. But if you have liberal tendencies, and if you want more government spending, and you want 65 new programs or increased programs, as outlined in the Democrat platform, if you want 22 new agencies or expanded agencies, as outlined in their platform, if you want a very, very liberal philosophy that brings you gun control and amnesty for draft evaders, and all those things, you can have it. You can have it. You won't like it after you get it, but you can have it in the Carter-Mondale ticket. But I think most Americans are going to opt for the right course. And I've seen some polls in Indiana that are highly encouraging. We appreciate your help. We want your vote. And if you'll work for President Ford for 6 more days, he'll work for you for 4 more years. Thank you very much. Well, I'm happy to be in Evansville. I was once stationed in Camp Breckenridge across the line here. You know a little about the area. It's in part of this area that we're going to carry it next Tuesday. We're very confident about state of Indiana. We're also confident about electing Bell and Bell to Congress, so we're coming along pretty well.
Yes, sir. Very good.
Good.
Encouraged. Senator, if you're so confident about Indiana and all of these other traditional Republican states, why are you here a few days before the election?
Well, just to really instill confidence everywhere we go, but it looks very good. I've had some poll figures handed me that looks very good.
Why aren't you in states where more help may be required then?
Well, we want to be sure we carry this state. It was on the target list, and so we think it's going to work out pretty well.
What do the polls show you, Senator, that you're...
Well, I don't want to reveal the figures, but I'd say it's good. We're ahead, substantially. Yes, and we're going from here to Nebraska. I think we're ahead, but the candidate for Senate's in a very close race, and then to New Mexico tonight, where I think it's, again, we're ahead.
What do you mean substantially?
How many states were on that target list, Senator?
What do you mean substantially?
I don't know.
I'd
say 5 points or more.
In Indiana, 5 points or more in Indiana?
Yeah.
How many states were on that target list?
Well, I mean, in my last week. I don't know how many states.
Oh, you have a separate target list each week?
No, but I mean, this last week we're going around.
Oh, targets
for
you,
I don't know how many states are on that list, but quite a few.
Is that a teeter poll that shows you 5 points ahead in Indiana?
It's a teeter totter.
When was it done? When was it taken?
Sunday and Monday.
Yeah,
right.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a whole national poll?
No.
What are the
At least I don't have. No, he may have.
What do they give you?
I don't even have all those. I just picked this up in Indiana.
How did they decide which were the target states for you?
I think they first decided where the president would go, and second, they decided where the vice president's candidate would go.
They
seemed to make a lot of sense.
Thank you very much.
Cracks?
They fill you in the cracks?
Oh, right, I fill in the cracks. I'll fill in anywhere I can be helpful, and cracks or no cracks or wise cracks or whatever.
And remind you how to have it.
Thank you very much. I don't remember this kind of reception. I came to Evansville as a private in World War II. But it's a great honor and a pleasure to be here with your fine Lieutenant Governor and your new Congressman, Belden Bell. I mean that very much. We need him in the Congress. When President Ford starts his full four-year term in January, he's going to need Belden there to ring the bell now and then for the people of this district and for the people of America, and to stop some of the spending. Get a lot of good signs around. We're going to carry Indiana, you know, by a pretty good margin, so that's going to be... We just left Terre Haute where Jimmy Carter was on the program. He's a local Jimmy Carter, and he was very good, and he got up and said he was going to vote for Ford. He decided Ford was the best man. So. Well, I want to take just a few minutes to talk about President Ford, and of course we're counting on your governor here, Governor Bowen, as I said to him this morning... And Fort Wayne, we're going to hang on to his coattails and certainly Dick Lugar's coattails. Dick's going to be a winner. But I'd like to address just a few remarks to the mothers in this audience and to the young men in this audience. And let's throw in the grandmothers and grandfathers and the fathers and everyone else in the audience, too. But I want to talk about peace. I want to talk about strength in America, moral strength, military strength, and what it means to American young men, what it means to America, what it means to our friends overseas, and what it means to our potential adversaries overseas. You know, we're strong today because of the American people. That's the first consideration. As I tried to say in my debate in Houston about 10 days ago, I have faith in the people. President Ford has faith in the people. We don't have faith in bigger and bigger government and more controls and more interference and more inflation and more spending, which leads to more and more taxes. That's the liberal Democrat approach to solving your problems. But we have faith in the American people. And the American people have faith, by and large, in our system of government. They want us to be strong. And I want to just suggest that if you've got any indecision, if you know of any friend or neighbor, Democrat or Republican or independent, they haven't made up their mind, just remind them that President Ford has had nearly 30 years' experience. He served in the Congress 25 years, and 14 of that 25 years, he was a ranking Republican member on the House Preparedness Subcommittee of the House Appropriations Committee. He knows our defense needs. He understands foreign policy. He understands our defense potential and our capability. But above all, he understands the need for us to remain strong. And I just sort of had a gut feeling all through this campaign. And when it came down to the wire, and we're down to the wire now, the American people, particularly young people, yes, and their mothers, as I started out to say, are going to say, going to ask themselves a question. Which candidate offers the best hope for peace? Which candidate offers the best hope for my son to finish his education or to work in his job without the fear of being drafted, and they're not being drafted, without the fear of being taken out of school or taken away from their job, put in uniform and sent to some far-off place to fight some battle where we don't know the answer and don't know why we're there. And it must be a great deal of comfort to American mothers and young men and young women to pick up the newspaper and turn on the radio and turn on the television. Oh, yes, and read about some of our domestic problems, and we have domestic problems. But you don't find any announcement of some memorial service in Evansville, Indiana, for some young man who's been killed overseas in an armed conflict. You don't see a daily body count of how many Americans were killed and how many of the enemy were killed. I never got much satisfaction out of seeing so many enemy and so many Americans killed. It never did much for me. You don't see some young man who's home on leave from the hospital with an arm gone or leg gone or otherwise disabled either mentally or physically. And I just believe when it's all said and done, on next Tuesday, and that's not very far away, when the American people stop to reflect on what we have now, and the fact that we are at peace, and the fact that we have a man in the White House who's had the experience and had the leadership and demonstrated that leadership, that we're going to ask ourselves, why change? Why should America change? We are respected by our friends. We are respected by our potential adversaries. We are at peace. Is there anything wrong with being at peace in the world? I don't think so. And I don't think most Americans think so. I heard Belden talking about my experience in World War II. I hope the day is coming in the next 50 or 60 years there won't be any more veterans. There won't be any more veterans because there won't be any more wars. That's the goal of America, and I hope that's the goal of the world. Someone asked me one time how I got into politics, and since Belden touched on it, I think it was in Indiana. I came to Indiana. When you go to Congress, they send you out to speak, and they send you to very safe districts. I think it was Charlie Halleck's district. And I'd been there about a year, and I went out for a fundraiser on a Saturday. When I arrived, the county chairman rushed up, and he said the advance ticket sale had already reached 10. Of course, my first term in Congress, they didn't know if it was Bob Dole or Bob Doyle. More people are learning now that it is Dole, but we still introduce sometimes as Bob Doyle. But I don't care because if Ford makes it, I'll make it anyway, so it'd make any difference. But I just remind you, they're both the kind of four-letter words you can get used to. So, and you can say. But anyway, I went to Indiana since they hadn't sold many tickets, they rushed me out to the radio station trying to drum up some sales. And during the course of the interview, they went through the fact that I was born and raised and injured in the war and all that. as we left the station to go back to town. The announcer was summarizing my visit, and he said that Congressman Bob Dole will speak tonight. I think they'd lowered the price of the tickets. Or might have even been paying people to come. I don't remember just how it was, but $1.50 or something like that. He said prior to World War II, he was a pre-medical student. He suffered a serious head injury in the war and then went into politics. So I don't... So... I don't know how Belden got where he is, or Bob Orr. And I don't even know how you got where you are, but I know how I got where I am. But I'm very proud to be here. I'm very proud to be an American, as I just tried to state, probably in a long, circuitous way, but it just seems to me that it's easy for me and probably easy for anyone else to stand up and find fault, to stand up and say, as some have said, that America's weak,